Welcome to the Dynasty Guru Podcast, Episode 5. I'm Tom Trudeau, joined by Andrew Ressler. Today we're talking fantasy hoops. The trade deadline was 4.5 hours ago, and so we have a lot to talk about. There's not as many juicy trades as maybe we would have hoped, especially as a Knicks fan. Major disappointment. Derrick Rose wasn't moved. Carmelo Anthony didn't waive his no-trade clause. But that doesn't mean that there's not plenty for us to sink our teeth into. And so to that end, we'll go back a couple of weeks. So that would include the Serge Ibaka trade, Cousins, and then today Noel. What strikes you as maybe the most impactful trade in terms of value changing?
Well, first, I think you undersold the trade down on a little bit. We did have a DeMarcus Cousins on the move, which will make this one of the bigger trade deadlines in a while. It just had an anticlimactic end because there were a lot of high quality pieces that we thought might get moved and didn't. But I would say in terms of impact, the biggest one has to be DeMarcus Cousins in terms of what does that do to Anthony Davis and to DeMarcus Cousins? What can we expect from them going forward? How confident are we that they can be top 15 fantasy players like they have been the past couple years? The other big ones for me, I think that Toronto trade was very interesting because it opened up the power forward spot for Aaron Gordon, a guy we have written about on the Dynasty Guru, and I'm excited to see what he can do at that position. Another big one for me is Jusuf Nurkić, the guy behind Jokic, who, as anyone who listened to our previous podcast knows, was behind one of our favorite players in Nikola Jokic, which I think one of our listeners last time told us it was actually Jokic, so apologies for that. I think he's a really interesting piece as well. And finally, Nerlens Noel. I'm very, very, very excited about him getting some time. I think he can be an elite top 20 fantasy asset going forward.
Yeah, I think you and I are going to sound like broken records sometimes because we both have infatuations with steal rate and block rate. If you use the per 36 minute function on Basketball Monster based on actual stats, Nerlens Noel is first in the NBA, at least among people that actually sometimes play, in combined steal and block rate. He also has come a long way in terms of his efficiency. He can actually make some free throws now, shooting above 60%, which is what you want to see from a guy who's mostly doing, dunking the ball. And then of course the rebounding, steals and blocks are there. So
yeah, just jumping on top of that, people tend to not pay attention to the leap he made because he lost a lot of minutes and he's only playing 19 minutes versus 29 last year, but his true shooting percentage has actually drastically increased, which you want to see from someone who's a 22-year-old. He was at 54% last year. He's at 63%, 18 points per 40 this year versus 15 last year. He is advancing and he's got the blocks and steals. If he can put up some points, rebounds and assists as well, it's hard to think that he wouldn't be a top 20 player.
Yeah. I completely agree. I do think that's going to be on the aggressive side. But if you are someone who feels like it's now or never and you got to make the investment for Noel, is that where you're putting him, inside the top 20 as a dynasty asset?
So that was me kind of talking more as an upside case. If he gets 36 minutes a game, I could see him being in that category going forward because we haven't seen him play that many minutes and we still don't know whether or not he can be someone you can build around at that 36 minute a game. So I think there's still a lot of risk in him ever being a consistent 36 minutes a game guy. So I'd probably have him in the top 30, but not yet in the top 20.
Is that because of health? Because with the Mavericks, the depth chart is clear and ready for him to take off.
I think for me, what makes me a little bit nervous is that the Sixers gave him up. And I think me and you tend to agree on this. We like stats. We like numbers. We don't trust our eyes because we're not basketball scouts. It concerns me a little bit that he was traded, especially for as little as he was traded for. In my opinion, for a guy with his kind of pedigree, advanced stats, and age, I guess he couldn't have played with Embiid. So I get him moving, but I would have liked there to be a little more interest in him. So I think that's kind of now kind of out of my expertise, is who's good enough to play 36 minutes a game. I don't know if he's there, but I do know that if he does get that 36 minutes, he'll be an elite asset. So I'm hedging my bets a little bit.
I guess the hedge that I would make is qualify this by saying if he gets those 30, 35, 36 minutes. I actually think he's a top 15 upside guy. Or upside's the wrong word. I think he is a top 15 guy. I think 36 minutes equals top 15. So there's going to be upside for even more if he can continue to progress. We talked about his true shooting percentage shooting up. So Nerlens Noel, there's going to be health issues, but I'm all in on the talent. Pedigree's there, and he had the steals or blocks are there. So the only thing that's really missing is the threes and free throw shooting. So that might cap his potential from becoming a superstar, but I do think he can be a top 15 type player.
Yeah, and I think you also have that free throw, just kind of for those who are in leagues. We've talked, I don't know if we mentioned this too much on this podcast, but we've definitely mentioned it on the site. For a team that you're punting, you really want to find guys to build around. He'd be a great free throw shooting punting guy because he's a 63% absolutely free throw shooter, and he'll win you steals and blocks. So if you're a team who's punting free throws and rebuilding, I would heavily target Nerlens Noel.
So Noel leaves Philadelphia, and that means that the 76ers have a little bit less of a logjam among their big men. These are some tricky players to evaluate, in my opinion. That's Joel Embiid, Okafor, and even Rashawn Holmes, who I did a post digging for diamonds on. Of those three, based on what you perceive their value to be in fantasy communities, which one would you be targeting? Obviously, that's heavily dependent on price.
Yeah, I think depending on price, I think Okafor will still go for higher than what I'd like to buy. I think Rashawn Holmes is the value here. Saric has already put up some games. There'll probably be some hype around him. I like Saric of the three as...
Oh, I didn't even mention Saric. Thank you for calling that out.
Yeah, so I like Saric between Saric, Holmes, and Okafor in terms of overall value. In terms of who I would trade for based on what a lot of people might think of him versus his actual quality, I'd say Rashawn Holmes, and the one I would avoid is Okafor. I think Okafor, I still, even with getting rid of Noel, I don't know when Okafor plays. He can't play on the court with Embiid. At some point, Embiid's going to be playing 30-plus minutes a game, and I think Saric has established himself already as a guy who could play 25, 30 minutes, a little power forward, a little center, even a little small forward. Rashawn Holmes, I also think, has a little bit of versatility. Because he can shoot the three, shooting 36% so far this year. Okafor can't play with Embiid. I don't know how well he can play with Simmons on the court, who's also not supposed to be a shooter, and he's coming back soon. So I would say target Holmes for value, avoid Okafor, and I like Saric the most of the three, but he'll be pricier than Holmes, I would guess. What do you think?
Yeah, I gotta say that Saric is one of the more tricky players for me to evaluate. We didn't really know too much about him because he had played abroad. But what we did have, based on his translated stats, was kind of a middling prospect. So when he came over and struggled, you know, this is a confirmation bias, but I assumed, yep, I guess he's just not that good. But he's caught fire in February, and you know, he's playing more, taking a ton of threes. Overall, the body of work's not that impressive. Still only 22 years old, but he is, you know, just weeks away from turning 23. And his PER of 11.53, well below league average of 15. True shooting percentage below 50%. So I do have some concerns about Saric being a good basketball player. And so, you know, we're going to talk a little bit more about this later on in the podcast. But he's actually, for me, someone that I think I would be selling high on. Assuming some people are excited about both the increased opportunity and his future since he's still a kid. As for Holmes, broken record alert, he has an amazing block and steal rate. So just keep an eye on him. You know, there's still some talent there that he has to work his way through to actually get on the court. But he does represent someone who could at minimum be a really interesting streamer these last couple of months, and someone to monitor into next season because he does get all those steals and blocks.
Yeah, definitely interesting. And I think the Sixers situation in general will be really interesting. I think as a dynasty owner, what I really want to focus on for the rest of the season, hopefully Ben Simmons comes back soon, seeing who can play on the court with Simmons and Embiid. Because if you can't play on the court with those two, you're not going to have any value, because that's the future of the Sixers. So It'll be interesting to see how Asarić, Holmes, and Okafor can play alongside one or both of them. And I think by the end of the season, that should clear up a little bit. And all three of those guys, we should have a good idea of value on.
Two more kids who we think are increased in their opportunity. And they're actually quite similar in my mind. That's Marquise Chriss and Aaron Gordon. Chriss on the Suns and Gordon in Orlando. Both of them are not necessarily prospects that I am drawn to start, because they're both similar tool shed guys. I guess I'd put Andrew Wiggins in that category. They're guys who didn't necessarily blow away people with their age adjusted production as collegiate athletes, but they did. They can jump out of the gym. Do you have any intuition on which of those guys you want to bet on? Obviously, Gordon is going to be quite a bit more expensive. But you know, we saw in one of our dynasty leagues, Chris get snapped up this week. So wondering, again, relative to price, which one you're interested in.
I think it's kind of hard to gauge price. In the fantasy league that we're both in, I recently traded Aaron Gordon in a package to get Al Horford. So I think in our league, there were more pieces to that trade. But in our league, what ended up happening was Aaron Gordon was valued kind of around a top 60 asset. At that price, I think he's someone worth buying, because I do like him at power forward. Marquise Chriss, I think, is a bigger value, because I don't think he's valued that highly in most leagues, and I really believe in him long term. But the problem with Marquise Chriss is I think it'll take a couple years. He's 19 years old. And you have to be patient. I think his value should be a top 60 asset based on his tools and his potential. And you'll probably get him for a top, 100, 110 price. Where do you think he's going right now?
I think it's probably a little closer to that 80, 90 range. Because he was a high lottery pick. And especially now that he has a little bit more opportunity. I think it's going to be a little more pricey.
So at that 80 to 90 range, I really think he should be around the top 60 range. I think Aaron Gordon should be in the top 45 range. I think you kind of get pretty similar value between the two of them at those prices. If you can find anything better than that for either of them, I would target them both. I'm a big believer in both of them. Chris, at his height, and the fact that he's already shooting some threes, he's 19 years old. He's not shooting them well, but he's attempting 2.5 a game.
So For reference, we saw Chris go get traded for Zubac and Steven Adams this week. I think it's a little expensive for me. But at that price, I assume that owner is basically thinking about him as a top 50 asset.
Well, I forgot about that trade. But in that situation, I definitely target Aaron Gordon, because I think Steven Adams is very good. I'm a big believer in Steven Adams, and I'd prefer him to Chris.
Yeah. For me, it's Aaron Gordon. I think he is a buy low. He had a really good sophomore year. He hasn't yet turned on the Jets. He's definitely getting more playing time, but I think recently, that game's going on right now. I was looking at today's game.
But I think even though it's going on right now, I think it's interesting to take a look at these, because we don't have much information as him as a power forward. He's played 19 minutes. He's got 9 points and 6 rebounds at this time of the night. And that's pretty good. That's pretty good. I don't know. We can't really take much from that. But he's going to get more rebounds as a power forward, because there'll be more rebounds available. He's going to get the opportunity to shoot and run the offense. And his usage rate should go up. With all of those things, you should see an increase in his current value already for this season. And you'll start to see the potential in him as a higher level player.
I think I'd also just go ahead and make the first obligatory Carmelo reference of the night. And that for those of you who didn't listen last time, Carmelo is the player projection system over at 538.com. It's inspired by Carmelo Anthony name, but it's an acronym. Aaron Gordon categorized as a future all-star. And I care about that. It's weird because his rookie warp projection was so bad, but I think they really liked his age 20 season, which was last year as a sophomore. So I trust his ability to break out and break out soon. So for me, Aaron Gordon's a buy, and I'm definitely paying top 50 value. Might go a little higher than that if you're rebuilding. Not someone who I expect to necessarily win any fantasy leagues this season, but for me, definitely the target.
No, and as we're breaking news for most people, probably a couple days or weeks late. I also want to mention Jusuf Nurkić's current game, since it's on the same page. So he currently has 10 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 steals, and 2 blocks in 24 minutes now that he's getting time as a trailblazer. He's a guy that I really wanted to talk about going into today. I didn't know he'd put up these stats, but his rebound rate, steal rate, block rate, all elite. What do you think of his potential going forward for this season and going forward now that he's no longer behind Jokic?
So I still don't think that he has the modern NBA game to take advantage of that block and steal rate. The opportunity is better, but remember, even when before Jokic was a thing and when he was slumping earlier this year, it wasn't like he was lighting the world on fire in Denver. So I think the way the Blazers view him is probably similar-ish to the way the Nuggets felt about him, and that was when they're more enthused about him, which is, this is a really nice rotational player. He can be a nominal starter and begin the game for us. But I don't think that he can do enough to advance a team who actually wants to win basketball games to stay on the court and become an impact player. So for me, I'll acknowledge the upside because of the block rate and the steal rate. And, you know, he does do some things nicely. And he's had three, you know, league average-ish seasons to date. But I would also point out his true shooting percentage, which we talked about a couple of times. It has hovered so far. He has a career high 52% true shooting percentage,
which is horrible percentage.
Really bad, really bad. Percentage. The guy can rebound. I'll give him that, but that's just not going to cut it. And I think he's someone that the Blazers will be constantly trying to upgrade on. So
off that, I think I almost agree with you completely in terms of his future potential. So it's weird to say this about a 22-year-old, but my view on Nurkić is, if you're a contender, the trade deadline hasn't passed and you can get him for cheap, I actually think he's a good this year add, and his value will start declining very quickly thereafter, because I think this will be the most minutes he may ever get, because he wasn't able to pass more than 18 minutes on Denver in 3 years. Portland doesn't seem very committed to him, and they got rid of Plumlee because they wanted to save some money. And he has no value if he's only playing 20 minutes a game. But at 35 minutes a game, 30 minutes a game, which he might get for the rest of the season, I think he has tremendous value. He can give you 2 blocks and steals a game, 10 to 11 boards, and like 15 points if he gets minutes for the rest of the season. So he's someone who, if your trade deadline hasn't passed and you're a contender, I think he's worth giving up someone for.
So another player that was previously buried that may get an opportunity to play a little bit is Dragon. Is it Dragon Bender? Dragon Bender?
Dragon Bender. I think I don't know.
Dragon.
I think I as a general rule, we'll mess up a lot of pronunciation on this podcast. Yeah. We apologize in advance.
I'm gonna keep calling Nikola Jokic. I think just just to be consistent. You know, I'd rather be consistent than right.
Yeah, and if he starts listening to our podcast and complains about it, we'll gladly change it. Hi, Nikola.
So Bender is someone who I was really excited about preseason. I'm a big fan of Kevin Pelton's warp projections for rookies. That's how I was able to identify Nikola Jokic. That's how I was able to have confidence in Kristaps Porzingis. He actually had a warp projection that was higher than Porzingis did. And that doesn't mean, well, what that means is that Bender theoretically as a prospect on paper before their rookie seasons, if you only had their stats to go off on and you knew nothing about them, their personalities, their work ethic, etc., you would have to take Bender. I mean, they both have that same 7'1" skinny thing going, right? But he has been a massive disappointment, even for a 19-year-old. And I'm wondering to what extent we should give him a mulligan. I'm inclined to stay the course and trust that initial warp projection, but even I have to concede that you better get a discount on him based on the fact that he's basically useless for this season, and there's no guarantees that he does more next year. What are your thoughts on Drogon Bender?
Yeah, I think it's definitely concerning when anyone plays this badly, even when they're young. I would like to stay the course. I agree you need a severe discount, but I look at a case kind of like a Brandon Ingram, who I don't... When these guys you get nervous about, you hear that the Lakers were unwilling to give up Brandon Ingram in a trade for basically anyone, and he was their untouchable. It means the team still have faith in these 19-year-olds, and I wouldn't cross them off just yet. I didn't really hear anything about the Suns rejecting any trades for a Drogon Bender, but I think the theme might stand that if you have a top pick who's really highly thought of, who's 19 and really thin, don't freak out if he doesn't perform right away. And I would stay the course. In your February rankings, you had Bender at 70, Chris at 72. I wouldn't pay for them at that, but if I have them on my team and someone's offering me someone in the 100 to 110 asset range, I wouldn't sell them either. So I think they're a hold. Both of them are a hold. I still like them long term. They're both thin. They both can shoot. They both have a lot of raw tools that are exciting, and they're both playing horrible right now.
You know, I just realized we never really had a final verdict on Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins. And rather than punt completely, I say better late than never. Where are they for you on like a top 10, 20 list? Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins.
Honestly, I'm pretty frightened for both of them. These are two of the higher usage guys in the NBA right now. They both have great rebounding numbers. I don't really know what will happen for them, and I'm not entirely certain that their efficiency is going to go up. So I would say Anthony Davis, who you had at tier 2, around number 4, I'd move him down a tier. I still think he's a top 10 asset. He's really young, really good, but I think he moves further and further away from other names who we used to have near him, like Kawhi Leonard. I don't think he's in the same league as anymore. I think he's the tier below that. And for DeMarcus Cousins, you had him down around 12 in tier 4. I would move him to the end of that tier. I wouldn't move him down a tier because there's a big drop between tier 4 and tier 5 in those rankings around 23. I'd say he's a top 20 asset, but no longer a top 15 or fringe top 10 asset.
Yeah. With the brow, Anthony Davis, I think he's so good and proven that I might not move him down at all. Not because I don't think the usage could tick down, but just because, you know, Cousins may not be on the Pelicans forever, and even if he is, it's Davis is enough in every category. He's efficient. He can make threes now, apparently. Well, maybe not. I think he's more of like a half a three a game type guy. But
hey, they both can shoot a little bit.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, this is a fascinating pairing. Because not only can they both shoot a little bit, I mean, Cousins is hoisting threes like crazy these days. They can also both pass. Especially, I mean, Cousins is one of the better assist sources in the game, and part of that is just he has the ball in his hands a lot. But they're both good passers, and you know, who knows? Maybe they find a way to coexist in a way that their efficiency and usage stays close to level. Cousins, I would fade a little bit, but just because he is such a unique talent, and I do expect to give you a lot of volume in every category. Probably wouldn't move him down, especially in 8 category leagues, where for me he's still probably a top 10 guy. 9 category just takes a massive hit turning it over as much as he does.
Yeah, but I'd say that's actually a place where he might benefit. With this duo, he'll probably lose a little ball handling duties. Both their turnover numbers probably go down. The thing that worries me is a lot of the greatness of Anthony Davis is his block rate and his rebound rate. I think he may have been leading the league in one of the top 3 or 4 in the league in rebounds. And if DeMarcus Cousins is playing center and guarding the bigs, who's getting those blocks? That's what concerns me, is the blocks and the rebounds. I think they're still both great players. I wouldn't fade them too much, but I'm more worried about DeMarcus. But I have to say I'm a little bit worried about Anthony Davis too, because he's averaging 2.5 blocks so far this season. I don't see how he can maintain that when he's playing with a DeMarcus Cousins.
Fun fact about Cousins, he's the most blocked player in the NBA. Also had the highest usage rate.
That usage is definitely going down.
Yeah. Speaking of blocks, Larry Sanders is auditioning with the Cleveland Cavaliers. So you and I, we have no insight into his personal life and where he is physically or mentally. But just curious, is he someone that you're interested in? He obviously was an elite block guy a few years back.
You know, I think this time of the season, there aren't very many guys who you can pick up off waivers who are going to be impactful. I would be willing to give a good portion of my dynasty budget for a guy like Larry Sanders, because he's one of the few guys out there who could be great. I don't expect anything from him. In fact, I expect him to be waiver wire fodder going forward, but he has a chance to be a real contributor. And I think that's worth a grab. And if he stays around, he'd be fun to own.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on your league. Context is king, but man, he was a second tier star with all the blocks that he was getting for a little bit. So if you are either a contender where you can stash someone on the bench and it won't hurt you, and certainly if you are a rebuilding team, I would love to right now make a 2-for-1 clear spot for Sanders. So a 2-for-1 where you're giving 2 and getting 1 for an upgrade and clear a spot for Sanders. So yeah, he interests me. He has a very fantasy friendly basketball skill set.
I can't think of many more guys. It depends how deep your league is. If you're in a 14-team, 16-team league, he's got to be one of the 2 or 3 at the least most interesting guys available.
So it's now home. It's now the home stretch for most fantasy owners, and in fact, many trade deadlines may have come and gone. But who are some guys that you are itching to move? For me, there a lot of being a successful dynasty owner, especially in deeper leagues, are avoiding the guys with exploding value, guys that are useful today, but you have an inkling that may not actually get playing time to the future, and so you move them now for something more sustainable. Are there any players that you see that are kind of must sell players?
Well, this one I think you should wait a week or two and then sell him, because with Deron Williams gone, Yogi Ferrell is going to get a lot of time in the near future, but I think his value explodes pretty soon. I still don't believe in him long term, so I'd wait a week or two, have him put up a couple games with 30 plus minutes, and then I'd move him as quickly as possible.
So that's Yogi Ferrell?
Yep.
Yeah, so somehow Yogi Ferrell was discussed twice in our podcast in 2 weeks.
Yep. That's impressive. Shouldn't happen.
Yeah. I'm selling all of my Mavericks. I think the Mavericks are, except for Noel, the whole team right now has huge contextual value. Meaning a lot of the volume that they're putting up is a product of being on a really crappy team. And granted, they might be crappy again next year, so I'm not dying to move Harrison Barnes, who will probably have a pretty high usage rate next year. But someone like Seth Curry, even though he's demonstrated a valuable NBA skill in being able to hit threes, he's not someone that I expect to be a long-term asset. And so if someone's excited about the numbers he's putting up, he's a sell for me. Another guy that I would love to trade right now is TJ McConnell. Somehow throughout the 76ers rebuild, they just have not been able to put a real point guard on the court better than a McConnell.
Yeah, I think his value explodes once Ben Simmons comes back, Ben Simmons ever comes back.
Yeah. I assume Ben Simmons is actually going to be tried at point guard. And even if he isn't, and I do think he is, They'll be trying to upgrade on McConnell. Right now, he's playing over 30 minutes a game, not for the season, but the recent weeks, he's been playing 30 minutes a game, and he's putting up pretty good numbers. I don't think the numbers are a fluke, but I do think he's someone that any NBA team will be trying to upgrade on, and that means that his playing time will always be at risk. So yeah, he's someone I would want to move.
There's kind of just one thing that I thought would be interesting is guys who aren't buy, sells, or hold right now, but in the next couple weeks after what's moved in the trade deadline, just kind of a speed round, who are some guys that you're interested in just kind of seeing how they fit in going forward? Because there's a few guys right now on my list who I just kind of want to see what they do over the next couple weeks, because I think their value could change dramatically.
Yeah, I think for a good one would be TJ Warren. He was not someone that I believed in early in the year. He was putting up a lot of points and even rebounds, but if he's going to be getting that massive playing time, and the Suns have historically been willing to play guys a lot of minutes. I mean, TJ Warren was getting near 40 minutes at the beginning of the year. I want to see if they're willing to keep playing him. And if they do, then he, you know, he's someone who we can in redraft leagues, we can ride him out. But again, for Dynasty, he'd be someone I'm looking to sell because I don't believe in the talent. I think he's someone that the Suns will be looking to upgrade on as part of their youth movement. So yeah, I want to see how TJ Warren has, what his playing time looks like. What about you?
For me, there's a few guys here that I'm kind of interested in. Mason Plumlee, who had some value. Can he play with Jokic? A guy like Terrence Ross, what's going to happen now that he's on a team that he started today? He might start, his usage rate should go up now that he's not playing with a DeRozan or a Kyle Lowry. Those are two guys who I'm interested in seeing kind of just how they play going forward. I don't know if they'll be good or bad, but their value, I think, can change dramatically over the next couple weeks.
So a guy who's really hovered at the top of 9 category rankings this year in terms of his actual production is Otto Porter Jr., I think at this point in the season, for 9 category leads, he is the number 12 rated player, right behind DeMarcus Cousins.
Yeah.
So I think people are still loath to believe it. They just can't wrap their heads around Porter being this valuable. And part of that is because he doesn't necessarily do anything at an elite level besides the steals, which we should care about. I guess, what are your thoughts on Porter generally, and also players like Porter that, especially in a head-to-head league, don't necessarily win you any category, but they give you a chance to compete in 9. He may be the only player that I know of that has positive values in every single category. Can you think of anybody else like that?
I can't think of anyone who's a perfect comparison, but there is a guy who I kind of thought of as kind of a similar type of player, which was Danny Green. When he wasn't putting up any flashy stats, there were a couple years there, 2013 to 2015, where he was averaging somewhere between 7 and 11 points, and he was still putting up top 40 fantasy years.
Danny Green actually had one top 15 season.
I didn't remember that, but that makes sense. So I think he's a good comparison of a guy who you don't really know how he does it, but he performs. And I think of Otto Porter as kind of like a 2.0 version of that, because he does a lot of the same things. He shoots some threes. He gets a lot of steals. He doesn't hurt you at all anywhere, and he helps you a lot in turnovers. But one thing Otto Porter does that I think makes him much better than Danny Green year after year is his field goal percentage this year is 53%. That's incredible. And I think that's what vaults him from a guy who's a perennial top 40 guy to a guy who could be really a top 20 guy. I could see him continuing to do this. In certain leagues, it depends what you're trying to do. He's not going to give you volume, and it's not easy to build a team around him. But I don't ever expect him to cost top 10, top 15 value. If you can get him giving up a top 30 asset, I think he's worth targeting.
Yeah, I mean, certainly for rotisserie leagues, I would pay full market. I mean, I think he's at this point, he's clearly, you know, top 15, 9 category player.
Which is, I think most of our listeners would probably be aghast at that statement.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but those across the board players, I often I think of them kind of as rotisserie players, and a lot of people, if you play especially redraft with head to head, they target the volume guys, and in many instances, they punt turnovers, they punt percentages. If I'm building a dynasty team, I actually like to kind of go with that rotisserie style strategy where I give myself a chance to win all nine categories, and depending on who my opponent is, I have my six or seven mainstays in the lineup, and then I stream those last two, three, four, depending on your league size, roster spots, to kind of match up with whatever their weakness is. And a guy like Otto Porter gives you flexibility to win a lot of different ways, and I think that's really valuable.
Yep, I think just kind of as a little bit of a caveat, so we acknowledge some of the potential concerns. He is shooting 46.6% from three this season, which is extremely good. I would expect that to go down a little bit just because I don't think anyone can maintain that elite three-point shooting. But even if that goes down a little bit, he's 23 years old. He could pick it up somewhere else. I really, really like Otto Porter. I think earlier in the season, I think a couple months ago, I offered an Otto Porter for LeBron straight up after he had a month or two of good stats, and I got laughed at. I think most owners now, if you're on a rebuilding team, would prefer Otto Porter to a LeBron James. And when you put those two names in the same sentence, you're going to get some interesting responses. But I think it's almost a clear answer for a rebuilding team at this point.
So one team that did not make any noise at the deadline was the Boston Celtics. Marcus Smart has had his best month of the season in February. He had previously not had a month in which he shot better than 37%. This February, he's shooting 46%, or actually rounded up to 47%. He's also averaging three steals a game. Marcus Smart, for those of you who don't know, was an elite prospect statistically.
He's
Not
an
that the
elite
scouts
Carmelo
didn't
guy.
like, yeah, big Carmelo guy, big warp guy, and that's always drawn me to him. I do worry about the situation he's in because the Celtics are so deep and they kept their pick, so they might get even deeper. But overall, I really like the talent, and he's someone who I think has really sneaky, subtle second tier fantasy star, like top 30 or so type upside. But he hasn't necessarily done enough to draw the attention of most owners. What do you think about Marcus Smart now that I've talked about him for 10 minutes already?
Yeah, I think Marcus Smart is one of the few guys that I can't get a read on at all. And the reason why is I see two very different answers on him. You got his incredibly high warp rating, his Carmelo rating's really high, and then you hear a lot of guys talk about him as a hustle guy. He's getting a lot of minutes with a great coach in Brad Stevens. So that makes me think he's a good player. And then I look at his field goal percentage, and you have a starting point guard shooting 37.5% from the field. And I think that's always concerning in today's NBA when you've got a point guard or shooting guard who just can't shoot. And that makes me nervous. I wouldn't buy him. I wouldn't sell him. And I could easily see either direction, basically 2 years from now, him not having that much playing time, or 2 years from now, him being one of the top 30, 40 assets. So he's a tricky one for me. I think if I had to decide whether to buy or sell, I'm buying because I think Brad Stevens is a great coach and I trust him. And if he's giving him 30 minutes as a 22-year-old, maybe he's a good player.
Yeah, a little fun fact for you. Marcus Smart is the second most negatively impactful field goal percentage for fantasy. So that's weighted by volume among all point guards, second to Emmanuel Mudiay. So definitely someone who's really valuable on a punt field goal percentage team. I don't necessarily think that's going to change, but it's not necessarily supported by anything in the numbers as a pro, except for what he did in February. But I think he can do much better. And I do think that there's a lot of sneaky potential there. So I'd be buying Marcus Smart, maybe around that top 40, 50 range. He has been a top 50 player the last 30 days.
Yeah, I if you offered me top 50 value, I may not accept it for him, but I definitely wouldn't buy him either. I could see it going either way. And I think if you're an owner who has a strong feeling one way or the other, especially if you like Marcus Smart, go ahead and get him, because I think he'll be kind of cheap because of that field goal percentage.
Anyone else you wanted to talk about before we wrap?
No, I think that's good. I think the last thing I want to say is I'm excited to see this Boogie Anthony Davis combo. I think that's the most exciting storyline of the second half of the NBA season.
And I'm excited to see where Andrew Bogut lands, because I think he is a really impactful defensive player in real life. I think he went down in that series last year in the finals, and they lost three games in a row, they being the Warriors. So really curious to see, maybe he'll go to the Cavs, I don't know, but I think that's interesting to watch.
Yeah, I'd like that too.
All right, well, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back with a Dynasty Baseball podcast over the weekend at some point, and look for another Hoops podcast in the next couple of weeks. Peace.